Everybody, this is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines, your national movement building show. You're also on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web all over the world on kpfk.org. And I'm really lucky to have this show, Voices from the Front Lines. I'm really lucky to have people that listen. I want to thank Leanne Hurst Mann, who was my favorite listener and my main listener. Sometimes there may only be one listener, but I know it's her because I get good texts. And I want to thank the listeners, really. We did some amazing shows, I think you know, before the election, focusing on what we call Take the Initiative. I want to thank Alan Minsky, our program director, for giving Channing Martinez and I, who's in studio, two shows we had Monday before the election at 11, and then the day of the election at 4, Tuesday, and we had the Tuesday before. And the listeners, you guys are great. You guys, meaning women and men, and seriously, people of all gender identity, but I continue to feel that the people that call the show are profoundly sincere and thoughtful and know how to get to the point, which we always tell you, you get 1 or 2 minutes, make your point. I don't even have to cut people off. And I just really love the listeners, and we're going to go back to the phones today, 818-985-5735, after I tell you what we're going to talk about at around 4:35. First, we're going to do a short review of a film called Indignation. I'm going to do a longer review next Tuesday. This is not really a review. It's a trailer upon a trailer. We're going to play the trailer first, and then I'm going to give you my review. This is a film. It's called Indignation. It's based on a novel by Philip Roth, in turn based on a short story by Sherwood Anderson called Winesburg, Ohio. So I'm going to tell you about it. Gee, we're going to do the trailer now for the film Indignation.
I see by your transcript that you're a remarkably gifted student. First in your family ever to attend college. Scholarship from your temple. But under religious preference, I see you didn't write Jewish, though you are of Jewish extraction. I'm wondering why that is.
I don't prefer to practice one religion over another. Praying to me is preposterous.
Is it now? Nonetheless, that is not what we are here to discuss. You're socializing enough?
Yes, I am, sir.
Have you gone on any dates?
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 Yes, I have. One.
Just one?
I want to hear all about your mother and your father, the butcher, and what it's like working in a butcher shop and what the girls were like in Newark. Relax.
Trust me, I'm trying.
What worries me
is Olivia Hutton's mental history, especially in light of the circumstances.
Why did you come and stand under my window?
Because it just makes me feel like I'm making sure you're okay.
She is weak. A person so unstable is a menace to you, Marky.
I'm afraid something terrible happened. I'm afraid I may have had something to do with it.
What is it you think you did?
So I think you know that film and film reviews are a critical part of the show, Voices from the Front Lines. Indignation, based on a novel by Philip Roth, in turn based on a short story by Sherwood Anderson called Winesburg, Ohio, is a wonderful film. Often so real, out of my own experience, it is the uncomfortability of feeling your own life in pink for relief. It's a film that I'll review next week, superficially, about a young Jewish man, Marcus Metzner, who goes to college to get out of fighting in the Korean War, goes to a small Christian college in Winesburg, Ohio. There he meets and falls in love with a beautiful shiksa, that is to say, a Christian girl, Olivia Hutton, played by Sarah Gadon, and the powerful if painful chemistry of cultural and sexual repression of the times leads to a tragic end for all involved. Among many other brilliant features, it shows the deep guilt and sexual repression in both Jewish and Christian cultures, thus the dreaded Judeo-Christian heritage imperialism asks us to embrace, and shows the seeds of how the racist, sexist, repressive 50s, the film is set in 1951, set the conditions for the revolutionary 60s. I urge you to see the film this week, and we can have a review and listener calls in next week. So, this is Eric Mann, you're on Voices from the Front Lines. That was the preview of the preview, the trailer of the trailer. Go see Indignation. For those of you who already seen it, we can talk about it. For those who haven't seen it, like Channing Martinez, he'll be totally prepared next Tuesday at 4 to discuss it with us. So that's the first part. I'm even shaken up. It's funny, I'm very shaken up even hearing the trailer. I will give you one more, not even a spoiler. There's an amazing 16-minute scene in which the dean, played by Tracy Letts, interrogates Metzner, and it's about this young student going in to see this Christian dean, and it's like a 16-minute debating society at a level of intense interrogation and self-defense that it's like real time. A 16-minute scene is unusual in the film to have an actual 16-minute conversation. So on 1,000 levels, I urge you to go see it, and I'd love to hear your opinions next week. All right. Hey, G, can we play some music? Because I just want to get my head into somehow Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and I need to just clear my brain for a minute.
Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say. It's all right. It's all right. Here comes the sun.
So I want to thank Nina Simone, because Here Comes the Sun, I think you know the indigenous people and many other cultures did a lot of work around the importance of the sun coming up every morning and just hoping that it did. And as a revolutionary, as long as the sun comes up, there's hope. So I do love that song. I never get tired of it. And that's the point. That there's hope, there's always struggle, and when sometimes people are sick at the strategy center, they say, I don't know, I need to take a couple of weeks off. I say, relax, imperialism will be here when you get back. So since imperialism will be back after a short break, as they say, this is Eric Mann, you're on Voices from the Front Lines. I want to tell you a few what I'm calling pieces of the puzzle. I am trying to write. And what do we do after the election, and what do we think of the election? I'm happy to say it's taken me a while. I haven't been one of the first people to jump out there. I'm very struck. Van Jones says, the answer is this. And Naomi Klein says, no, the answer is that. And I was shocked how everybody knew the answer the day after the election. I mean, isn't there anything that surprised you? Isn't there anything to figure out? So I'm still trying to figure some things out. But the way my mind works is I do what I call pieces of the puzzle. This I know is true. I don't know yet how it all fits together, but I want to go on a couple of things that I know are true. So that's a good way of starting. After the election, things I know are true, which doesn't mean they are true. So I should say things I believe are true. The first thing is very important, is the most important thing that I can contribute, and I mean it, is focus on Obama. President Obama is the president. Donald Trump is not the president until January 20th. So I urge you to not focus on protesting about Donald Trump. That's what the Democrats want. And to the degree you're an independent, revolutionary, or radical, why are you protesting Donald Trump when Barack Hussein Obama is in the White House doing none of the things that we want him to do and doing some very bad things? So between now and January 20th, which means midnight on January 19th, Barack Obama has tremendous executive power. He can issue orders to do just about anything. And many of them, as I'll explain, cannot be overturned by Donald Trump when he gets in. So when we call 818-985-5735, you can even say a word about indignation if you've seen it. How's that? Imagine having an opinion before I do. And we're going to focus a lot on Obama, Trump, and Hillary. So the first thing I want to make it very clear is the role of the executive order. I have so many things I want to write about. I want to write an article called Mumia Abu-Jamal is a Black Political Prisoner and Barack Hussein Obama is not. The way that the Democrats keep acting like Obama is a prisoner of the Republicans, a prisoner of this. He's not a prisoner. He's president of the United States, president of U.S. imperialism, was elected twice. He has his finger on the nuclear button. So he can issue any executive order that he wants. And I'm going to go into why he doesn't want to. And this is why many of the things he didn't do is why Donald Trump was elected. So please, we had the first Black president. We had the first Black president reelected. Yeah, we had the Black president who had 2 full years with a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House. All the things the Democrats told us, oh, it was wonderful if you only had it. You had it, and you blew it. But you blew it because that was not, as I will get to, Barack Hussein Obama's intention. He was not running as a leftist or even as a progressive. He was running, in my opinion, and this is not a minor observation, he was running as a center-rightist in the Clinton tradition. He was not running as a left liberal. No, I should say he ran as a left liberal, but he was not a left liberal. And from the day he got in, he had no intention of moving a so-called progressive agenda. So 8 years later, we have figured that out, and much of the backlash, in my opinion, is not against a Black president. Of course, some of it is, which we'll talk about. But a lot of the so-called backlash is the profound confusion of people that don't know what the hell to do because the system is falling apart at the seams and the Democrats provided no leadership. We'll come back to that. So what can Barack Obama do, really? The first thing he can do is he can go to Standing Rock and stop the pipeline. There are a lot of demonstrations talking about calling on the Army Corps of Engineers. I'm sorry, I'm just being my most opinionated self. No, call on President Obama. Go to Washington. Sit in front of the White House. Tell Obama he must end the pipeline through Standing Rock. Figure out what demands you want to place on the president around Standing Rock and go and do it. That's number one. He can free Leonard Peltier and should and must free Leonard Peltier, who was indigenous, Native American, revolutionary, totally trumped up charges. He can drop charges against Assata Shakur. He can pardon Ethel Rosenberg on the 100th anniversary of her life for the non-existent crime of espionage for which she was executed. He could end the Department of Defense 1033 program that gives military-grade weapons to schools, cities, counties. He can put the Los Angeles MTA in trusteeship and cut off all their federal funds. He can do whatever he wants to do. So please understand that when Dwight Eisenhower, a Republican, brought federal troops into Little Rock, Arkansas, to allow black children to go to school, he did it because he was commander-in-chief of the Army. You need to know that President Obama can bring the troops in and put the LAPD in trusteeship. He can do whatever he wants to do. So if there's nothing else, because he ain't going to do almost all these things, at least grasp that anything President Obama didn't do, it's because he didn't want to do, folks. You hear me? He was not a prisoner of this. He was not a prisoner of that. He was a prisoner of imperialism, which is the system that he embraced. And I mean that these demands must be placed on him. So stop the Trump. Stop it. And move to President Obama. On January 20th, we can focus on Donald Trump. But I believe the Democratic Party has infiltrated the 501c3s, that many of the funders who fund 501c3s are really saying, when you do voter registration, do it so we can get elected Democrats. Make demands on the president that are light. Don't take on Democratic administrations in the cities. Now, I'm not saying all the funders believe that, but I think there is an implicit bias, as it was, in that direction in the funding world. And those of us, including myself, who are funded by foundations, I will tell you, have been fiercely fighting since we started the Strategy Center for our right to take on the Democratic Party. And we've won a lot of those fights. But let me say, it's a fight. It's all, you know, and the worst thing they're going to do is not give you the money, which is not the end of the world. So what was Eric Mann's first main point? Take on President Obama and ask him to exercise the fullest extent of executive power in the most intensified way. Now, here's the second point that's going to scare the hell out of you. Donald Trump is already talking about the executive orders that he plans to do the first day in office. The first day. He ain't playing. And what I'm getting to is, sadly, neither is Obama, because the difference is Donald Trump has things he wants to do, and Obama does not want to do it. Do you understand? So that is a conscious choice, that he is not choosing to free Ethel Rosenberg and free Leonard Peltier. He's not freeing Mumia. Which is, he's not a federal prisoner, but he could figure out. In every single thing that you want done, Barack Obama can do it. Stop the stuff about Congress. That's a myth. So maybe that'll just be my main point. This whole thing is a sham. When we went to Paris, this is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, 818-985-5735. When we went to Paris, President Obama told the people in Paris, this must be voluntary. This must be voluntary because I can't get it through a Republican Congress. And every single country bowed down to President Obama to say, all right, we got to do something Obama can come back and have a victory about. So in return, they gave away the store to the United States because Obama wanted to come away for victory, which obviously Donald Trump does not plan to enforce. The Republican Congress was not going to enforce. Hillary Clinton wasn't going to enforce. So it's just, again, how Obama has successfully hustled people to say, help me, because I'm a prisoner. And he's not a prisoner. He's in charge of the prison. So that's point one. Eric Mann, 818-985-5735, if you'd like to participate in this conversation. The second thing is that I think that the entire Clinton campaign was fixated on conservative whites. And what it did is it elevated the self-importance of conservative whites, racist whites and conservative whites, to say, we all agree that this election means white votes matter. Hillary Clinton did not care about the black vote. She wanted the black vote. She would do nothing for black people that would piss off white people. She did not. She kept saying comprehensive immigration reform, comprehensive. She never explained the reality of Latinos in a way that whites could respond to. I reject the concept that white people don't care about black people, that white people don't care about Latinos. Of course, most don't. We get that. But that's not the theory. The theory is a transformative theory. I'm talking about Obama did it. Obama convinced white people that caring about blacks and Latinos with some hypothetically progressive agenda that he never carried out was the best way to actually organize whites. Hillary didn't do that. Hillary's trump card. Oh, was that Freudian? I swear I didn't plan that. Hillary Clinton's trump card was the white conservative woman. And it didn't work. It didn't just work because the white conservative woman was racist. It also didn't work because of the problems of Hillary Clinton and her bankruptcy as a candidate. She was unable to mobilize anybody. The black vote was down. The Latino vote was down. The Bernie kids didn't come over. The young people didn't come over. She lost in every single constituency. And I want to do study. So one reason this is a preliminary thought. I do want to look at the numbers carefully. There's debate about all the different numbers. I do know this, right? This is what we know. We know she couldn't get the Bernista kids, right? We know there was a decline. Obviously, some people voted for Bernie Sanders and voted for Hillary. We know there was a significant drop-off, and I want to go study the numbers. I ask you, 818-985-5735, I ask you one question. What's one reason why the Bernie Sanders voters did not vote for Hillary? Eric Mann, you're on Voices from the Frontlines. One reason. It's because Hillary Clinton and the Democratic establishment sabotaged Bernie Sanders. Do you not know that happened? That was a public event? So if you choose to twist the rules against Bernie, and then you win through a crooked game, Bernie's going to still cut the deal. He has to stay inside the Democratic Party. He has to come back to Hillary Clinton. But he couldn't deliver the voters. I want to find out, seek truth from facts, what percentage of the Sanders voters did not vote at all, voted for Jill Stein, and I would argue many of them did not vote. Secondly, I want to look at the black vote. I don't know all the numbers. We know that Trump got more black votes than people thought, and this is complicated because Trump, I would argue that Trump's anti-Latino rhetoric, which was racist and disgusting, had a certain resonance among black people. And then here's something complicated. Because the Latino political establishment has not been pro-black, because black people have been driven out of the best jobs, have been driven out of hotel, restaurants, have been driven out of auto, have been driven out of domestic work, and they look at Latinos getting the jobs, and there has not been an effective Latino leadership that's reached out to the black community and said, we don't want to take your jobs. It is not true that Latinos have no say inside a capitalist economy. The Latino political establishment, the Latino unions right now that are keeping black people out are partially responsible for anti-Latino feeling in the black community. There's enough blame to go around, but the point is, without a unifying political narrative inside the Latino community, inside the black community, you're seeing this growing dispersion, and I'm arguing that this contradiction is brought about by the Democrats. You hear me? In every major urban city, there are no Latino Republicans, and there are no black Republicans. In Los Angeles, in New York, in Philadelphia, whatever fights are going on inside the city, are between Latinos and blacks, both of whom are Republican, are Democrat. And it was only when Harold Washington and, I have to remember, I don't want to get the name wrong, of the Puerto Rican leader in Chicago, who got together and built a real black-Latino alliance, that we were able to see the potential of a black-Latino alliance. There is no black-Latino alliance in LA, except for dividing out the spoils. My point is the Democrats, in their utter and complete bankruptcy and chaos, brought a lot of this down on themselves and didn't deserve to win. Now, here's a couple more points, because you're right. I'm in a very anti-democratic party mode right now. Before, we'll deal with Trump, which I'll get to. But right now, as I say again, Barack Obama is the president. Here's two other facts that are very interesting. I'm going to read you an article in The Nation. It says here, Obama promised change, but he's been captured by the interventionist orthodoxy that rules Washington. Please note again, he's been captured. The man has not been captured. He's a brilliant, brilliant, charming, fascinating human being. He doesn't get captured by the interventionist orthodoxy. He advocates. He believes in it. It says, as we approach the final months of the Obama presidency, the guy writing it is James Carden. Very good article in The Nation of... You'll see it, very recent. It says, it's clear that the change in foreign policy that candidate Obama promised voters has not materialized. Duh. 7 years and 9 months. His pledges to end the Iraq war, to pursue a nuclear-free world, to improve relations with Russia, to act as an honest broker between Israel and Palestine, and to improve relations with the Arab world would have all been left unfulfilled. That his likely successor, oh my God, sadly, this was written obviously before the election, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is to the right of the president on matters of national security is in a way an all-too-fitting monument to an era of dashed expectations. Meanwhile, in addition to waging a new and more dangerous Cold War with Russia, the administration, which views the South China Sea as a core national interest, launched the so-called Asia Pivot. This is Obama, which moves U.S. policy towards China from one largely based on shared business interests to one that seeks to contain China's rise. The president's much-publicized trip to Southeast Asia this year was a good indication that Washington intends to surround and isolate China by employing bandwagoning states like Vietnam. All right. Now, I urge you to read that because the point is that it is possible that Donald Trump will move away from his military confrontation with China as Obama and Clinton would have done even worse. And I'll end with saying this. 818. Whoa, I got a lot of calls. All right, we got a lot of calls. We're going to go to the phone. Whatever, ringing off the hook. 5 more minutes, folks. You have to. Now, here's the only rule. Please listen while I'm talking, while you come up with your own thoughts. Here's a last scary thought. I was listening to KPFK, because I listened to KPFK, and I'm sorry I didn't know the name of the show properly. It is a Middle Eastern show, but it's more like a South Asia, all, you know, from the Middle East to South Asia. A terrific show I was listening to yesterday. Listen carefully. It said that in Palestine, there's jubilation that Hillary Clinton lost. That Hillary Clinton was going to not just continue the occupation of Palestine, but essentially annex Israel into the 51st state of United States, or make the United States a state of Israel. I'm very serious. Think about this. When Barack Obama won the nomination and Hillary Clinton and Barack made their deal to work together, where did Hillary Clinton take Barack Obama to give the opening speech of the campaign? The American Israel Political Action Committee. She brought him here and said, folks, don't be frightened by him. He is going to be a great, quote, friend of Israel. Think about how terrifying that is for the Palestinians. Now, if you believe, which I do, that the Israelis are carrying out genocide against the Palestinians, then the election of Hillary Clinton would have been the most devastating consolidation of that genocide. There's another very good article in The Nation called, pardon me as I flip pages, after this, what I told you about, It's about the privatization. It's called How Israel Privatized Its Occupation of Palestine by Anthony Lowenstein and Matt Kennard. It helps the state avoid accountability for human rights violations. Listen carefully to what I'm saying. If Hillary Clinton had been elected, this mass occupation and brutalization of the Palestinian people would have been almost put in concrete. I don't know what Donald Trump is going to do. I am not advocating for Donald Trump. I'm really not. But I am saying that in listening to the show, it said both in China and in Russia and in Palestine, yes, they are welcoming a Trump victory against Hillary Clinton, who was going to go to war against China, Russia, and Palestine. For all those who are protesting against Trump for his legitimate, his illegitimate racism, his illegitimate everything, are we even considering these questions? Were these even part of our emotional calculation? Remember, we didn't have any control in this election. I'm not arguing we should have elected Trump. I'm arguing that I don't feel the same sense of profound catastrophe that other people do. I fought the Democrats my whole life. I fought Lyndon Johnson. I fought John Kennedy. I fought Bill Clinton. I fought Hillary Clinton. And we're going to fight Donald Trump. But we're going to have to fight on both fronts. And I can't allow myself to be organized by the Democratic Party into a hysterical campaign against Trump, knowing the crimes that the Democrats have carried out right in front of our faces in front of this election. So to conclude, focus on Obama. Whether you agree or not, there are things we can ask the President of the United States to do. Two, focus on whoever's doing the wrong thing. Take on Trump, on the things he's doing, take on the Democrats. But if we're going to build an independent social movement, we're going to have to deal with whoever is in power. And the reality is it's still a two-party state, none of which are parties that represent our interests. Okay, thank you for listening. This is my first effort to think out loud. I welcome, by the way, critiques, suggestions, modifications, rebuttals. This is my show where I talk out loud, and I have terrific listeners. But I wanted to end, actually, I have one more point. I'm reading The Nation. I'm listening to KPFK. I am influenced by other people in the last 2 weeks that are, it's besides my own thoughts. People have been writing and people are reading, so please let me listen to your ideas. All right, Bill, thank you. You've been very good, Clinton, Obama, and Trump. So we're going to the phones, folks, 818-985-5735. One more thing. I always say that. Please tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks. Please register on our website, voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Please send us an email, eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. We need to hear from you. You're great on the phone, but you folks, you're not great tweeters and you're not good emailers. And me and Channing Martinez, we live for these emails, so we get a concept of what you're doing. Okay. Bill, thank you for your patience.
Yes, I was listening to Margaret Prescott's show the other day, and she was playing one of Obama's speeches when he was getting people to feel comfortable with him, voting for him, getting a lot of rich white liberals to feel comfortable with him. And he was hearkening back to the great revolutionary, end quote, George Washington, the slave master.
Right.
Now, the reason why he was hearkening back to this supposed great American revolutionary, I put in quotes, rather than Frederick Douglass, obviously rather than, any decent person like Nat Turner or the general of the Civil War, Harriet Tubman, or John Brown, or any of the real American revolutionaries. The reason why she was harkening back to the slave masters to make the bankers feel comfortable with them. And it worked. It worked brilliantly. He's a good cop administration. Clinton was a bad cop administration. And it's worked. And it didn't even work with you. And now you're telling people to call up, rather than calling to mobilize the multiracial working class, to free Pelletier, to free Mumia Abu-Jamal, to free, to drop the charges on Assad Shakur. Right. People are saying, well, please, let's beg with the top cop of U.S. imperialism, the guy that got away with the same stuff, right? Maybe.
Oh, wait, brother, but Bill, I want you to finish, but then let me respond to you for a minute. Keep going.
So what's necessary is to mobilize the multiracial working class against imperialism and not to beg the master class and their hoodwinkers and their super slick hucksters, like a brilliant man that Obama is, but he's brilliant for what class? He's brilliant for the banker class. So the point is to mobilize the multiracial working class. And you can read about this in the pages of the Internationalist, and not through trying to pressure the Democrats or plead with the master class, Obama included. He's a capitalist.
All right, Bill, you did a good boy. Let me respond to you. Okay, and thank you for calling. Obviously, you were the first caller. Interestingly, my reason for, in that I think imperialism is a unified system, then I'm not begging anybody. My problem is that the people who run the prisons are Democrats and Republicans, the people who run the corporations. If you're going to mobilize the working class, you have to train it to make demands against those in power. I disagree with Bill, but that's why we have a show. I do think it's important to call on President Obama to free Mumia, free Lenin Peltier, pardon Ethel Rosenberg, stop the blockade and the drilling in Standing Rock, and the 1033 program. That's what I think, and we'll continue to be having this great conversation. Thank you so much for calling Voices from the Frontlines. 818-985-5735. John, you're on next. Hello, John.
Hello?
John, this is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines.
Hi, Eric. I was reading on Twitter, there was a user, DAMN_JEHU. He's had a lot of, really interesting thoughts posted there. And one of the things that he discussed was the nature of political parties. And, I've been a Democrat since 2009. I was a Republican before that. I voted for Jill in this election. But at the same time, I haven't joined the Green Party because I don't really see them having a viable way forward in this system we have. And one of the suggestions that he came up with was based on part of the Green Party's platform, which is calling for participatory councils at the local level. And he noted that in their platform, it's kind of useless because it's not binding. But, this is something that's been used in cities before and around the world, in Porto Alegre, and also...
Well, let me respond to that, and thank you. I mean, the first thing I want to say is that I'm disappointed in Jill as well and the Greens because I think one of the things the Greens should have done is dug in to a few areas, whether it would be one district in South L.A. or one city, and show that they could get, she wanted to get 5%. I don't know, again, the number. It looked like it was about 1%. But we had an experience with Jill that was very disappointing where we were trying to build a movement against Measure M in Los Angeles. We met with Jill 3 or 4 times. We met with her press secretary, Lisa, and she kept promising that she was going to put out a flyer on our behalf, and she couldn't do it. Partly she couldn't do it because the Greens in L.A., mainly white, very conservative in my opinion, were supporting this regressive racist sales tax because they're in bed with the MTA. So my point is, here she's running as a revolutionary against the Democrats. And in some way, she's tied to the internal contradictions of her own party that couldn't even vote the right way in a major city like Los Angeles. So I think that every single option we look at, whether it's the Greens, whether it's the Democrats, whether it's Trump, they have their own internal contradictions, to say the least. I'm not saying the Greens are the same, but I don't think that her campaign, I think if she stayed in Standing Rock for the, there's a lot of things they could have done. But more importantly, what I'm getting to is, let's be clear, the Green Party in Los Angeles, Jill did not take on her own party inside of Los Angeles as I think she should have. David, you're next.
Hello, Eric. Thank you for your comments. Let me get you off speaker here.
Good. I like that, David.
Thank you for your comments. It was very refreshing in the glut of Trump news to hear your comments about focusing on Obama. I agree. I don't think the riots are, you know, blocking freeways is going to further the causes that, you know, very legitimate causes often that the people want to advance. When I used to joke with my friends when Obama was first elected in 08 that don't get too excited. He's half white, you know.
Wait, I will go. I'll let you finish, but I have to respond to that. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that we have to be very careful that we're not, tricked or whatever by the color of the person. It's really a person's beliefs, like Dr. King said. It's the content of a person's character. And there have been moves, like with Clarence Thomas, that was no one wanted to criticize him too much because of his race, but it does a double disservice, I think, to black people to have him in the court where there were many more qualified black judges, I'm sure. I mean, I'm an attorney myself. I've done international law, but I think it's so important for you to focus on Obama and what he actually represented. You know, in Long Beach, we have.
I'm going to ask you to stop there if that's okay.
Yeah,
you
sure.
made the main point, and I appreciate
course,
it. Let me respond to it.
Yes, please.
Anytime you do one point, you're going to leave yourself open to another point. I want to be very clear that I do not agree with what you just said. Barack Obama is a black man. This is, if nothing else, let me take a few minutes on this. I think it's not right to talk about black people, to say a black person is a certain percentage white. If you read Black Reconstruction America by W.E.B. Du Bois, he said at the time, I'll just pick a number. He said there's 20,000 black people in America. Some of them are 100% racially black based on their parents. But obviously through slavery, through rape, through many other factors, some have white relatives, some are partly Native American, but they're all black. And I think this new concept of mixed or discussing, I think it's racially discriminatory. President Obama was the first black president. I voted for him in 2008. I voted for him in 2012. I worked for him intensely. I don't take that vote back. I'm glad I worked for him. That was a different, it's called contradictions. In 2008, the contradiction was Obama against McCain. I worked for Obama. In 2012, the fight was Obama against Romney. I worked for Obama. That's not the issue. One brother said, don't even deal with the guy because he's an agent of imperialism. Another one says, well, he's probably white. I don't agree with either of them. I'm making a different point. Right now, he's the president of the United States with power. I am not trying to expose him. I'm trying to get him to change policy. I'm saying to the young people, if you want to look, I don't know what you want to do. If you want to demonstrate against Trump, demonstrate against Trump. I am not telling you the movement should do this. I am urging those who care. I urge you to focus on Obama because you need to know that between now and January 20th, he is still the president of the United States. And I do believe there'll be more than enough time to protest against Donald Trump. That's my point of view. So let me clarify. One, yes, I think he's an agent of imperialism. But two, he's president of the United States. Two, he's a black man who won two amazing electoral victories in the United States. Three, he's an advocate of a very frightening, imperialist, aggressive policy in the world, especially towards Russia, which has been an escalation, towards China, which has been an escalation, and sadly, towards Palestine. Four, he can issue executive orders, and we should urge him to issue those executive orders. And five, we need to grasp some of the terrible policies that Hillary Clinton was going to bring about if she got elected. And when we deal with Donald Trump, there are going to be many terrible policies he's going to carry out when he's elected. And when we get to that on this show, I can assure you, when he's elected, I mean, when he takes office, we're going to focus more on Donald Trump. So you get my point, I hope. Let's move on. John, next. Hello, John. You're on KPFK 90.7 FM. You're on Voices from the Front Lines with Eric Mann.
Yes.
John, what do you, yes, I can, John.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just wanted to say, first of all, yes, I worked hard for Bernie Sanders, and I was very, very upset with the Democratic Party for essentially pushing him out and playing tricks to do it. And I, for the election, I wrote him in. I live in California. And I wrote him in. I was going to vote for Jill Stein, but I had found through other people that apparently she had been trying to ace out other organizations that were trying to come forward. So I was very much, I thought of Hillary Clinton as to the right of Nixon, and there's no way I was going to vote for her no matter what. And also I thought that some of the things like Trump, I felt, you know, I didn't like a lot of his racist stuff, but I did like a couple things that he said, one of which was he wanted to have a better relationship with Russia. Another was he wanted to pull out of NATO or greatly reduce our activity within NATO. And I felt like on an international scale, I thought he was way better than Clinton. And he called out Bush for starting the Iraq War and Clinton for supporting it. And nuclear weapons, I think, I'm more concerned between the U.S. and Russia over nuclear weapons. They and we both have 93% of the total nuclear weapons in the world, and nuclear war is a real possibility. So that's why that's how I view this. So
And hold on just a second. I'm going to leave you there. I think okay. That was very good. I think, let me see what I'm learning from this, really learning from this. I mean, part of the problem in this election was we wanted, you know, I think in the election with Barack Obama, I felt and I understood the line. I understood why I was on one side rather than the other. I stand by that. I don't have to keep standing by it. But in this election, as a lot of people are saying, when Trump says about Hillary Clinton that the Clintons enriched themselves through the Clinton Foundation, large numbers of people who were not racist said that's right. As this guy is saying, when Hillary Clinton is saying that she wants to go to war with Russia and have a no-fly zone over Syria, Jill Stein correctly pointed out this is terrible, terrible stuff, frightening stuff. If Trump says he wants to work more with Russia, and if you're concerned about nuclear Holocaust, then I am not arguing who to vote for. I'm simply arguing to you that you wonder why the Democrats lost? I mean, God, even within their own base, there were so many contradictions around Hillary Clinton running as a arch-right wing candidate at her core with a few little feints to the left. Lisa, next. So I think some of the points you raised were very helpful, by the way. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Eric. I know some Bernie Sanders supporters were sincerely disappointed and sincerely believed Hillary was not that great. However, I think part of what happened was due to some organized, or not so organized, trolling by Trump supporters. You had people on sites like Rush V and the Daily Stormer saying, I'm going to troll progressives by saying, I support Bernie, now I'm switching to Trump because Trump's actually better on some populist issues and Hillary's not any better than Trump. I think maybe some progressives were persuaded, if not to vote for Trump, at least not to vote at all or to vote for Jill Stein. I think there's been a lot of trolling from the right and people. Oh, now there's the people doing fake black people accounts to try to move black people in a certain direction. I think trolling and people claiming to be what they're not are moving people in the wrong direction or at least into apathy.
Well, let me say that I mean, that's a whole nother story, is the whole issue of all the dirty tricks that Trump played, all the dirty tricks that Hillary played. I think sometimes when you look at an election, you want to say, well, what is the central contradiction, right? What's the main point? So, for instance, if you want to say the biggest issue is immigration, then on the issue of immigration, you'd say, I don't care about anything else. Hillary Clinton would be better on that than Trump, which I believe she would. But you then stuck with, but Hillary Clinton and Bernie supported this wall that we have. I'm sorry, it gets more complicated, that Obama, not Trump, deported 200,000 people. I'm getting to the, as I'm talking out loud, even when I try to make the case for Hillary on a logical basis, the rebuttal is very, very powerful. We're talking about a candidate that had all the cards to play and destroyed her own campaign because, in essence, the Democrats, this is my, I guess, my punchline, the Democrats continued the center-right trajectory of the Clintons when I was hoping that Obama would not continue the center-right trajectory. It led them open to racism on the right. It led them open to a very exciting populist challenge that Bernie Sanders ran with all its limitations. And then they didn't even have the intelligence to treat Bernie Sanders well. And I think, don't underestimate that as I'm trying to figure all these things out. The dirty tricks done by the Democrats, including in California, if you remember the AP poll and all those things that were leaked. I mean, God, could you not figure out you're going to really need the Sanders people? And now, one last thought as I'm still thinking out loud. Right now, the Clinton machine is blaming racist whites, Bernie Sanders. There's some blame of Latinos. There's some blame of blacks not being well enough. I mean, we're talking about a sinking ship that's blaming many of the people that could have been part of a constituency to defeat Donald Trump. So again, I just read a story today about don't blame Bernie and don't blame, you know, every single white person. But the concept that the Democrats believed that it was theirs, almost like by right. And when you lose an election, you don't blame all the people and caricature all the people who voted against you, because I want to say a thing that just I want you to hear clearly. I've spent my whole life fighting not just white racism, but white people. I can tell you more than anybody, not many, but many people, all the problems with white culture, white society, white everything. But I was there when white people voted for Barack Obama. I was there. The jokes about Whole Foods, I saw all those great people in Whole Foods with their Barack Obama shirts. I saw white people. Obama won in Iowa, which was all white. He won a second time. So if there was a backlash, how come it didn't come the second time? I don't want us to give the racist right, which is maybe the dominant force inside white society, the belief that they now speak for white folks. There's been substantial anti-racist breakthroughs among some white people. And I don't want the Clintons, who've been some of the worst racists, to now blame all the white people in a way that consolidates the white racists as if they're hegemonic among whites. Jim, next 2 minutes. Jim.
I'm taking my call.
Yes, I am.
I'll make my point real quick. I've listened to your show many times, Eric, and I love your show. And I'll stick to your topic. What can Obama do?
Good.
He can do something that is pretty amazing, and it will throw a little wrench in the whole Trump machine. He can declare immunity to every undocumented person in America, like Reagan did back in the 1980s. He can clear the slate.
That's right. Well, thank you, because a listener actually responded to my point. Yeah, Reagan issued. Thank you. Take the last minute. Stretch that out, because when Dolores Huerta did that for my book, and Dolores Huerta said one of her great victories was working with Reagan on amnesty, I didn't know that was true. So take the last minute, Jim.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think your point is right. We shouldn't be focusing on January 20th. It's always during the last few months that a president, when he has nothing else to do, can have the most power to issue executive orders. And every president has done it. And you are right. And I think if he does this, if he issues an immunity for everybody here who's undocumented, people can breathe a little easier.
Jim, that thing, how we are, oh my God, a listener who actually listened. What a concept. You're listening. I did it my way. I want to thank my dear friend, comrade, partner, producer, Jenny Martinez. And I want to thank Philip Roth for writing a wonderful, wonderful screenplay called Indignation. Please go see it. I want to thank the people in Standing Rock, the Indigenous Environmental Network, who desperately need President Obama's help. I want to thank Ethel Rosenberg for having the courage to not capitulate before she was killed. I want to thank Leonard Peltier for all you've done and ask President Obama to free. I want to thank Free Mumia. I want to thank those who want to get rid of the 1033 program. I want to thank G, who is always our engineer and sound person. I want to thank Alan Minsky. And I want to thank you all for being wonderful listeners. I'll see you next Tuesday. Take good care of yourself. All power to the people. What I had to do and saw it through without exemption. I will have